Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Nick here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on?
Just another magical Monday. Hope you guys are doing okay.
Hope you're doing okay as well. Lots to get to today with you. The draft coming up this week. The Ryan Tannehill Instagram saga. We'll get to that here in just a few minutes. I want to start with the Preds, though. Not a great weekend. 1 point for the Preds, but now the magic number down to 2 with Vegas choking that game away last night against San Jose. What do you make of the Predators and the way that they're playing right now as they head into the final week of the regular season?
Well, I think it's, you know, been a little up and down like they've pretty much been since the All-Star break. But, I mean, let's face it, this is a really tough part of the schedule. I mean, going into this weekend with these two games, I said, you know, I said, if they can get 1 point, I said, I'll take it. You know, 2 points would have been great. But, I mean, did you see what Tampa did to Florida last night?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They hung a snowman on them. I mean, they scored 8. So Tampa's rolling. And so I think, you know, that's just one of the things you have to consider. Does that mean the Preds can't play better? No. I mean, the Preds can play better, need to play better. You know, need to get, I mean, and Robbie, you'd know better than me. Is it me or is the penalty kill starting to struggle a little bit here as we finish the season?
Oh, it is. And you keep putting them out there, that's a problem.
And that would seem to be something that they've got to get, you know, figured out going into the postseason, regardless of who they play. So, you know, they're not perfect, but they're still scoring goals. And last I saw, when you scored goals, you gave yourself a chance to win. They just got to lock things down defensively a little better.
All right. What do you think? The Ryan Tannehill fishing, is that a huge, as some might tell you, is that a huge kiss off to the entirety of the Titans fan base, the Titans organization, Vrabel, the state of Tennessee, the NFL, the United States of America? What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I do know this. I mean, the timing of it's terrible, and the imagery of it is bad, because, you know, I mean, look, it's been talked about. You know, he had a bad game, you know, and you had a chance to win the Super Bowl, and there are fans that were hurting for weeks and months after that game, and, you know, you'd think you'd be back with a vengeance. Instead, you're putting out the message that you're back hooking a marlin. And, you know, maybe that's the way you get ready, but just the look isn't great. The look isn't great. I'll leave it at that. I don't know about messaging. I don't know Ryan Tannehill well enough to know if he's sending a message to anybody.
Corey, what do you think of the A.J. Brown saga in terms of the social media, the Twitter? I mean, he's deleting tweets left and right.
It's 2022, right?
It's 2022. I mean, we saw the Debo Samuel situation last week with his mother on the Instagram Live. What do you make all this and how this plays out with the Titans?
Well, I mean, I think the more A.J. can keep it off of social media, the better. Because, I mean, and I guess that would be the better for the Titans, not necessarily for him, depending on what he wants. But most of these guys who play this stuff out on social media, I don't think it usually ends up looking very good for them. I mean, when Kyler Murray took all of his Cardinal stuff down, did everybody jump on the Cardinals or did they jump on Kyler Murray? I mean, I think they kind of jumped on Kyler Murray. When Antonio Brown was FaceTiming live Mike Tomlin's post-game message, did everybody get on Mike Tomlin and the Steelers? No, they got on Antonio Brown saying that wasn't the right thing to do. And so, you know, everybody likes dirty laundry, but when you put the dirty laundry out there, everybody seems to have an opinion that that probably wasn't the right way to go. And, you know, I think, you know, AJ's been on there some, but I don't think he's done anything that's been ridiculous. Or going, oh, wow, I can't believe he said did that by any means. But, you know, you just let your agent, you let the team do their work, and if it works out, it does. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's me being a 51-year-old man saying that in 2022. And I know that's not the way people operate these days. But to me, you know, it's better for everybody if you just handle your business. But again, I'm an old fuddy-duddy, so I what do I know?
Well, I'm right there with you, buddy. But we both, you know, we both have relatively updated phones, I feel like, and can, you know, can navigate the social, some, at least some of the social media apps. So do you think anything happens with AJ, Corey, before the draft? Do you think it needs to happen?
You know what?
Do you think it does happen?
I think a week or so ago, I said, no way. I said, I would have said, oh, they want to keep him. They've made it clear they want to keep him. And I think he wants to be here. And I think they do want to keep him. I don't think that that's changed. But the thing nobody knows for sure is how much money AJ wants and how much, you know, he thinks he's worth. You know, everybody seems to think it's, you know, $25 million is like the magic number. Everybody, oh, he wants $25 million. Has he come out and said that? Has his agent come out and said that? I mean, if they have, I haven't seen it, okay? You know, we've heard the Titans are offering 20. Well, that 20 would be an accurate number judging other contracts. When you see Mike Williams, when you see Chris Godwin, when you see DJ Moore, and when you see some of these other guys and you see the numbers AJ put up, you would say, okay, 20 to 23 or something, you know, in that area would seem to fit. But that may not be what AJ and his agent are thinking. You know, they may be thinking he's the biggest thing since sliced bread. He just needs the right team to get him the football, and, you know, he's worth this much money. And we don't know. And that's my whole angst with this whole thing, is if he's asking for an unrealistic amount, and again, I don't know that he is. All I know is that he doesn't have a new contract and the Titans want to give him one. Okay? And to me, this is the big concern. You go into draft night and you don't think you can get him signed. Now, look, you can play it out and you can franchise him. You can do that if you think it'll work. And a lot of these guys have a way of making that not work sometimes, so we could see. And I just think you kind of have to have it resolved before then. And if you have a monster offer, I think you'd have to entertain it.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Corey, speaking of the draft, we are mercifully 3 days away from this thing getting rolling here on Thursday night. This is the last time we'll talk to you before the draft, so I'm going to put you on the spot. What position? Well, I don't know. We'll see. What position are the Titans going with their first rounder on Thursday night?
You know, I'm going to be with most people and say wide receiver or offensive line. And I know that's not one position. We did our first of our two draft specials last night, and I said Zion Johnson from Boston College because I just think, you know, how many times can Mike Vrabel say, you know, we want to have good people on this football team, and that kid, you know, nails down that area of good people, good player, fills a need. And, you know, I think he could be a 10-year starter, but, it, you know, it depends on who's there. I think best wide receiver, best offensive lineman on the board, you know, is where they can go. And it's just a matter of which one. I can see Trey Penning. I can see Zion Johnson. I can see, who's the big kid from Texas A&M, the offensive guard. Well, you know who I'm talking about.
Green.
Yeah, Green. You know, Jahan Dotson, Treylon Burks. I mean, having Treylon Burks and A.J. Brown rolling through a secondary would have to be terrifying for a lot of teams. I mean, that's two big dudes. And I know we said the same thing with Julio last year, but we got to see Julio on a limited sample. And so, I mean, I think, you know, while he's not necessarily different from A.J., like a Jahan Dotson or a Chris Olave would be – having two of those guys out there would be, I think, kind of fun to watch. And so I think that they can, I think there's a lot of players that can help them at 26. And I don't think they're going to have a bad choice if they want to take that pick. Because I also think the best pick for them would be trading back and getting more picks in the top 100.
Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff as always. By the way, nice attempt to see I guess you eliminated a draft prospect the other day. No Tyler Vrabel for the Titans.
I asked Coach about that before the preseason, and he let me know that Jen had made it clear there was no way he was going to play for Mike. And so I knew where that one was headed. So that was a big fat one right down the middle for me. I need to answer that one before I asked it.
Very nicely done. Corey, great stuff, man. Appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys. Anytime, by the way. If you want to talk to me tomorrow, I'll be here.
Hey, we might take you up on that. Corey Curtis
from
News 2.
Don't tempt us.
All right, yeah.
That's right. Bye, guys.
Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The NBA playoffs are rolling on, and you can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay every single week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many ways to play, and best of all, when you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. NBA playoffs have been very interesting so far. You've got Celtics and Nets tonight in game number 4. I've got my money on the Heat and the Hawks tomorrow. I think the Heat close it out. Give me Miami on the money line. Give me Jimmy Butler over on points. Give me Bam Adebayo over on rebounds. But you take it any way you want to take it. If you're new to FanDuel, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with promo code ROB to get your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same-game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet of $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game for the Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor coming up on May 16th at Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities. You can sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. Once again, that's thegamenashville.com/golf. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Corey Curtis for joining us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland coming up at 9 o'clock as well. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, what do you make of that situation? It is draft week. We've talked a lot about A.J. Brown and his next contract. Do you feel like the Titans should bring their best effort to the table to get something done with A.J. Brown this week prior to the draft?
Yeah, well, I think that they should not and really take it away from this situation. They've done things a certain way, and it's kind of timed out this. And it's a pretty standard thing. I mean, a lot of teams, I think, get most of their extensions done in more in July. I just think that sometimes a situation dictates, you know, a change of routine. And I would say that this one warrants some consideration and some effort to try to see if you can get it done. And I don't know, just because the Titans have done it the same way, I don't know that John Robinson has said, well, that's just how we're going to do it. And that's how it is. You know, I don't know that he's ever said that. I just know that that's how it's worked out. This one, I feel like it'd be, again, just so you know exactly what you're looking at when the draft begins. I think it would be, and not to mention, you can just quiet everything down and get it locked up and have that security that, you know, you've got a deal done. Because that's when I asked Corey, did I think anything would be done? I think he took it as a trade. I was saying anything, you know, either a deal or a trade.
Yep.
And, so I do think that it would be beneficial for the Titans to get it done if they can. Even though, I mean, again, if you want to just talk about this from a workload standpoint, John Robinson is kind of busy this week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one problem with that whole idea is, like, you know, they are trying to, you know, prepare for a massively important draft. It may not be a sexy, exciting draft, but boy, is this important for the Tennessee Titans 2022 and beyond. So that's also part of the problem. I mean, you got to devote your time to certain things. You only have so many hours in a day, but I think it would be worth trying and attempting. And certainly I think AJ Brown's going to be on the Titans one way or the other. And I don't think they're going to trade him, but I think just like with the quarterback stuff we talked about a couple months ago, you know, keep phone lines open. You never know what kind of wacky Washington football team like deal you might get.
Well,
I
agree. But to that point, I mean, you're also, I think if you're John Robinson, you need to be confident that AJ Brown's going to sign a long-term deal with you. And to Corey's point, I mean, we don't know what A.J. Brown is asking for. I would assume that John Robinson does know what A.J. Brown is asking for. And if you just feel like maybe there's a sense that you're not going to be able to meet and come in the middle there somewhere, that affects your draft this year. Like, you've got to find receivers as you move forward if you feel like there's a chance that A.J. Brown may not be a part of things as they move forward. Now, how far along are they in contract talks? I have no idea. How have the negotiations gone? Like, could you even determine yet if you're John Robinson, if there's like you're just so far apart that you can't bridge a gap? I don't know. Like, I don't know any aspect of what the deals and what the talks have looked like with AJ Brown and his representatives. But if you have a feeling that AJ Brown, it may not work out in terms of him signing a contract with you, doesn't that affect the way you draft coming up on Thursday? Mute for Rex Road.
Dang it! I was gonna have a better week too. Probably won't. Yeah, I mean, if it's like it might just be the difference between going receiver first round or going receiver. I still think even if they are fine and get it all locked up or they feel good about AJ, I still think that you have to use a pretty valuable pick on a young receiver and get another guy in there. Because your depth isn't great there, and you need, I think, another weapon on this offense. But if you're miles apart and you don't see it changing, does that increase the chances of going with a receiver first? Again, you have AJ Brown can play on that rookie deal next year, make $4 million or whatever it is. You can tag AJ Brown after that. You can tag him again. I mean, you can do that, but what will that mean? What will that mean for him? What will that mean? You know, it's not the road you want to go down. You don't want to go down that road. And as Corey said, I mean, if players make it clear they don't want to be somewhere anymore, most teams are like, okay, well, I don't really want that around.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Josh Reynolds. Josh Reynolds was hurt and it just appears in the final analysis after watching that he just didn't really fit here, but he's talented enough, certainly. And here and there you saw like him produce. And I think he could have produced in this offense. Well, as soon as the word got out that he was asking for a trade, bye. Not the same thing with AJ, because AJ is a precious commodity for the Titans, but just saying, you don't want to go down that road. And more and more, once that road is traversed, I feel like the player's getting their way and they're getting moved and they're not getting stuck in that spot on the tag.
Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Santa in Portland texting in says, what do you think about the idea that if they draft a wide receiver they really like, they use that as leverage in talks with A.J. Brown? This is coming from Santa in Portland. So maybe drafting a wide receiver in the first round that they like, saying, AJ, you'll take this money or we'll send you somewhere else.
So, I mean, the idea like now we have him, we don't need you as much. Is that what Santa's saying? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think a receiver drafted here is going to be used against AJ in talks. And I think he'd probably laugh at that. And he probably should. It's a rookie. He knows that they need more receiver depth anyway. It doesn't change. Like, you're not drafting anyone. If you were drafting, like, Jamar Chase or something, you're not drafting anyone who's going to threaten his spot as a number one receiver on the team. You may draft someone who could be a number one receiver at some point, but I don't think those two things really cross paths.
Matt from Camden on the text line says, if they don't extend AJ before the draft, that tells me the Titans aren't that far apart, because if they were, I'd think they'd be trying to trade him. This is coming from Matt from Camden on the text line. I don't know if I necessarily buy that, Joe. Like, just because, let's say you go through this week and the Titans don't trade AJ Brown, I don't think there's like some deadline in place for John Robinson of, well, we have to have something done this week, or at least be close this week, or I'm trading AJ Brown. Now, will he listen if that's thrown out there and there are good offers? Maybe. I don't know. But I wouldn't necessarily read into, if AJ Brown is still on the roster next week, that that means that the Titans are really close to a deal with him.
I agree. And I don't think them being far apart right now mandates a trade at all. No. I don't think they want to move him. And again, I think, see, the thing with AJ Brown is, you know, like, you look at what happened with like Le'Veon Bell, you know, and the Steelers, right? Just decided he's not going to play. I think with AJ Brown that he would play, you know, he would hold out, but he would play. And that's just me guessing based on what I know of him and being around him some, a lot less last couple of years, but I think he's a guy who would play and want to play for his teammates, and, you know, would not carry it past, you know, like a camp holdout. And I think the Titans probably know that too, or probably feel that way. And that could also be, you know, a factor here to consider. Again, you don't want to go down that road, but I don't think he would take it to the extreme. But I agree with what you said. I would not read too much into nothing being done this week. They could still be miles apart, and you just keep working on it. And sometimes that's how things go. And eventually in July, you do get close enough and you can finally make it happen.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the draft coming up around 9:30. Coming up next, we'll get into the Preds. Big weekend for the Preds. Not a great weekend in terms of the results, but now the magic number down to 2. What do we feel about the Preds and how they're playing heading into the final week of the regular season? That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
That very last play, John, is it a little bit too much aggression on your part there?
Yeah. It's one of those situations where it's kind of a 50-50 confronted puck battle in a danger area. You know, just understanding, you know, in those situations, there is no layers of defense in there. So I think you just got to be a little bit less aggressive in that area and just count the numbers of where guys are at.
Tough way for the Preds to lose last night. Minnesota scores with just over a second left in overtime right before the shootout was to commence, and the Predators fall 5-4 in overtime last night against the Minnesota Wild. And Joe, not a great weekend for the Predators in terms of the results. They got hammered by Tampa Bay on Saturday, 6-2 the final score. Which, by the way, Tampa's hung up 8, 6, and 8 in their last 3 games, so the Lightning seem to be turning it on heading into the playoffs. And then last night you lose 5-4. So all in all, only 1 point out of a possible 4 this weekend for the Predators. And it looked like the Preds could be in some trouble last night until about 0.9 seconds remaining in regulation between the Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights. The Sharks tied up with less than a second left in regulation. They force overtime, and then they win in a shootout. So Vegas robbed of a point last night, and you're still 4 points up on Vegas now with 3 games left to play. So the magic number for the Predators is down to 2 points. If you can win, or Vegas loses out on 2 points, you're going to be in the playoffs as they move forward. So Dallas taking on Vegas coming up on Tuesday. I believe that game is in Dallas as well. So, Joe, all in all, not a great weekend in terms of the on-ice play for the Predators, but the results, they're still in pretty good shape when it comes to making the playoffs.
I mean, if you're Vegas, you had to have the 2. Yeah. You had to have the 2. That's a killer to blow that and blow a point. I mean, you're sitting there now with 90, with 3 games to go for both the Preds and the Golden Knights. You had a chance to get it, you know, to within 3 points. You're now sitting there at 4 points, and your row, the Preds are up 41-38 there. So, that may be the thing. We look back on it, you know, that I guess got the Preds in, you know, they'd really have to screw it up to not be in. But then again, you know, the Preds, look, Calgary going to be a tough game tomorrow. Last home game, very good team. Could be a playoff preview. Colorado Thursday going to be a very tough game. The word out of there, you know, they're upset right now. They've lost four in a row. It doesn't matter because they're going to be the one seed, you know, in the West, and that's been obvious for a long time. I guess, you know, maybe you could look at it. If you're a Colorado fan, you might be like, hey, good, no President's Trophy then. Why don't you go ahead and take that, Florida? But like the way they're playing and losing to Winnipeg, seeing some comments out of there, I could see them like pulling a Tampa Bay on someone sometime soon, you know, kind of like, okay, let's just start opening a can on some people before the playoffs. So I don't think the Preds are going to come in and find a friendly, welcoming Colorado Avalanche on Thursday. Certainly the Preds could go pointless the next two games and have to do something in the finale against Arizona, which is not what you want.
It's not what you want. And look, they've just, you know, Forsberg gets his 40th of the year last night. Duchesne scores again. He's got 41. Johansson scores. He continues to play well. But they're just not getting much from other guys right now. I mean, the goal scorers of late have basically been Johansson, Forsberg, Duchesne, and Josi. And they've had some other guys sprinkle in here or there. But that's about it. I mean, Fabro scored last night. Carrier scored in Tampa Bay. But we talked about this earlier. And to me, this is a big deal as they head down the stretch. We've spent so much time talking about Tolvanen and Cunnan and the lack of offense that they provided this year. Which, by the way, Tolvanen a healthy scratch on Saturday. I thought he was basically Casper the Ghost last night, invisible on that top line with Johansson. And that just can't – it's time to be – concerned about Tolvanen in my mind. But the other part of this is the herd line with Jeannot and Sissons and Trennan. Those guys haven't even had a point in 9 games for Jeannot, 12 games for Trennan, and 17 games for Colton Sissons. Not a point in that stretch of time. That is pretty concerning to me, and I get it. Their primary responsibility is not offense, but they have been, when this team's been at their best, a pretty good part of the offense as well. Tanner Jeannot's got 24 goals this year. And for all three of those guys to not have a point in the last 9 games, 17 in Colton Sissons' case, 12 in Trennan's case, that's pretty concerning to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're not just here to knock people into the wall. I mean, when this team was going well, that line was also producing. I mean, that line, the you know, talk about a line that, again, sets the tone, sets the identity, whatever you want to call it, establishes a crunching forecheck and gets production out of it. You know, I mean, that's been a big part of the success of this team. It's right after, you know, the big gun scoring this year, and especially, like you said, Tolvanen. Here you go. You get a healthy scratch, and then, okay, you're on the top line or whatever you want to call it, one of the top lines with Johansson. How are you going to respond? Just didn't see much, not seeing much. Tomasino, I mean, again, I think Tomasino overall, it's been a pretty good rookie year, but Cunnan hasn't done much. A lot of guys, I thought the Preds would make the playoffs this year without any of these ridiculous numbers from Duchesne and Johansson because I thought guys like Cunnan and Tolvanen were going to give them some nice balance throughout the lineup. And now, to your point, those are eye-popping numbers of futility. But that line has to produce on this team. It does. Not the same level as the big guns, but it has to produce something. So do you think about finally going to the Darren McFarland plan? We're going to have Darren at the top of the hour. We can ask him again. The plan of sending Jeannot up with Johansson and seeing what that might look like.
I think it's something that you definitely should consider if you're John Hines at this point, because quite frankly, playing Elie Tolvanen in the top six right now is a waste of time. It just is. It's a waste of time. Playing Luke Cunnan in the top six is a waste of time right now. And I know Cunnan got moved back down to the fourth line last night, but we're 79 games into the season. The sample size is large enough at this point that that's not going to work now. It's not going to work in the playoffs. they got to figure out something else to do on that front. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Nate on the text line says, what did you think of the officials allowing both teams to take their time with challenges last night? The Wild didn't use a challenge, but it definitely seemed like they took their time looking at potentially a goaltender interference more than the allotted 30 seconds to make a decision on both sides. We talked about this a little bit earlier. I thought the officiating was horrendous last night. It was a goaltender interference play on Minnesota's second goal of the game. Middleton falls directly into David Rittich, and I thought it was pretty clear goaltender interference. And they come back and say that the Nashville player, meaning Luke Cunnan, caused the contact. Did Luke Cunnan make contact with Middleton? Yes, after he'd already fallen down into the goalie. So he didn't cause contact with the goaltender there. I just thought, and there were some calls on both sides, as you pointed out earlier, that were just really ticky-tack. I thought it was horribly officiated last night, and that's, you hate to see that this time of year in the playoffs. I thought the officials were atrocious last night. And then you did, on the play where it is goaltender interference, and John Hines is taking a look at it, it felt like they gave him 5 minutes to look at it when it's the 30-second play that you're supposed to be in and out of. And then on Minnesota's, I think it was Johansson's, or it was, excuse me, it was Duchesne's goal where Johansson's in the crease, they felt like they gave Dean Evason like a minute and 30 seconds to look at that thing. Like, call the game the way it's supposed to be called. I thought the officials were god-awful last night at Bridgestone.
Yeah, I was wrong again on a goaltender interference, which is usually the case. But, man, that one I felt pretty good about. I mean, he absolutely made contact on his own. You know, Cunnan, I guess, kept him there, but he slammed into Rittich totally on his own. And then it's like, you know, then you got players piling in after that. I thought that was definitely going to be taken off the board. And it was interesting with all the time. That's a good point. That's not supposed to be what happens there. I think with Hines, he was probably – obviously with Hines, you know that right then Rittich got a penalty. So you know if you don't win the challenge, not only do you get a penalty, but you're looking at a 5-on-3. So you're down a goal and you have to now kill a 5-on-3, which is what happened. And actually the Preds, that was one of the best moments of the game. That was the loudest the arena was all night, by the way, was after the 5-on-3 and sort of the surge they had after that, or the 5-on-3 kill. But anyway, I agree. It was bad officiating, and this is no way to get people ready for the playoffs when we know ticky-tack fouls, or we expect ticky-tack fouls, will not be called left and right, ticky-tack penalties. And so now let's – or maybe this is the official saying, hey, let's get ready, guys, because all of a sudden we're going to call things tight in this Stanley Cup playoffs. Yay. I doubt it.
Justin on the text line says, another game, another useless Cunnan performance highlighted by a penalty. He should have been set over a month ago. This is a huge oversight by Hines. Cunnan with another penalty last night. Eli Tolvanen with a penalty last night on Freddie Gaudreau coming in the zone. Just those two are – it's not good from those two right now. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live this Wednesday on 1025 The Game. Smashville Live airs on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m., featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show via 1025 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. So be sure to join us for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Predators, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Preds fall last night 5-4 against Minnesota in overtime, but the magic number now down to 2 points. We'll have Darren McFarland on coming up at 9 o'clock to get his thoughts on the Predators as well. Got a texture that says, against faster teams like Edmonton, Tampa Bay, and Minnesota, break up the herd line. They are too slow on the forecheck. This is coming from a texture on the text line. I think you may be approaching breaking up the herd line anyway based on every game lately. But, again, that's something that Hines has been hesitant to do. When they're at their best, I understand it, because when they're at their best, they're very effective not only defensively but offensively as well. And you want to leave them together, but – you know, 9 games without a point for Janot, 12 without a point for Trennan, and 17 for Sissons. That's not good enough. You can't win in the playoffs that way, especially when you're not getting anything from Tolvanen and Cunning either.
And I do think, I mean, that's a good point about especially the teams that are faster and that get that puck moving. You know, you just those guys get neutralized a lot easier. And I definitely think of that Edmonton game. It was just like, man, they can't beat them to anything. You know, the Oilers were like a step ahead all night. And so then you just take away the effectiveness of what those guys do. Got a texter saying, let's see, you got a Johansson with Janot and Trennan, Sissons with Cunning and Cousins, Tolvanen and Tomasino and McCarron. Yeah, I don't know, I guess. I mean, Tolvanen, I think, you know, I think a lot of things. Tolvanen could be like last year's Fabro.
Yeah.
In the postseason, I think that's possible. But you're looking for enough forwards to fill out the spots, and you don't have great answers.
Avanzies on YouTube says, this is why getting a secondary score was far more important than Jeremy Lauzon, even with all the defensemen out at the time of the deadline. Phil Kessel would really help right now. I don't think it would have cost a second rounder for him either. It's coming from YouTube. You know, we talked
fair
about
point.
That.
Fair point. Obviously, Lauzon, you know, nobody's fault that he's hurt, and I don't know. You tell me. I don't think we're going to see him again.
I'd be surprised, but, I mean, I guess there's a chance. He's, you know, in hockey, you're getting week to week. That's about the best you're getting this time of year. So have no clue what his actual injury is, but it didn't look good. I know that.
And, you know, with Benning and Borowiecki, I mean, I think you feel okay about your third pairing right now. So we talked about the idea of getting one more forward, and they could use one right now. There's no doubt about it. Or they could use somebody to step up. I mean, I don't know what's more surprising. Probably to me, it's Tolvanen. But I thought both of them would have much better years.
Well, we've talked about, you know, how is it that Matt Duchene has 41 goals and Philip Forsberg has 40 goals and Roman Josi's at 90 points and they're in this spot? Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, it's third line's gone dry the last 15 games. Tolvanen and Cunning have brought virtually zero offensively all year long. And the other part of this, I mean, you look at the last few results against some big-time teams. St. Louis hung up 8 on them. Tampa Bay hung up 6 on them. And Minnesota, and keep in mind, Minnesota without like 4 or 5 key players last night, hangs up 5. I mean, Kevin Fiala was, I thought, the best player on the ice last night for both teams. Defensively, and it's not just goaltending, defensively, they've not been very good as of late. And they've got to be way better than that come playoff time. We talked about this earlier. You know, you and I have argued a little bit back and forth on the Calgary-Colorado front of this. I still think Calgary is the better matchup. I'm not as strong about it as most people are, that it's that significantly better than Colorado. But right now, if the Predators play the way they played the past month, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be a very long stay in the playoffs if there's not some drastic improvements from multiple guys throughout the lineup, and I'll put goaltender in there.
Well, yeah, and I think go back to January. We talked earlier on the show, like the enjoyability of this team way down. And I mean, I think some of that could just be as simple as not winning as much, but they aren't as fun to watch. They aren't doing as many things well. They looked at the time to me like this is a matchup a lot of people wouldn't want at this time of year. Like, do you want to match up with that the way they play in May? I don't know that you do. And now the Preds look like a team that is matchup dependent heading into the playoffs. Like, they need the matchup, you know, their way. I still think Minnesota probably is a better matchup than a lot of these, but better than, like, St. Louis, Colorado, and I would say Edmonton, too. After watching them skate circles around the Preds, it's the same kind of thing to me. They seem like the team that needs the matchup their way versus the team that presents the matchup problem. You know, it's a big change. But I still think you can boil this all down to, you know, UC Saros, you get this extra rest here, and there's going to be a whole bunch on his shoulders tomorrow night and Thursday, however long it takes him to at least get in the postseason. And then there's going to be everything on him in the playoffs. If he's great, if he's as good as UC Saros can be, which we've seen enough to know it's very good, then they have a chance. Right now, he's getting hung out to dry quite a bit, and that certainly happened at at Tampa on Saturday. Okay. Yep. But there's still, I feel like in a lot of these games where they're getting lit up, there's still one or two where it's like, man, vintage Soros at his best gets that one, and he's not. And 875 save percentage his last five games, credit to John Glennon, kind of tells the story.
Well, there's another level that he needs to get to for this team to have a chance in the playoffs that he's not been at on a consistent basis since the All-Star break. I mean, especially the whole team. Go back and look at the record since the All-Star break. They're basically a 500 hockey team since then. So you're going to need a lot of things to go right. I mean, I still think, you know, Duchesne scored last night. He had two or three other really good chances in the game. Forsberg scored last night. He had two or three other really good chances in the game. I mean, those guys are still playing well. Johansson, I think, still playing really well. Josi, for the most part, even though in the last couple of games, he kind of lost his brain a couple times defensively on that side of the puck. But other than that, I mean, he's playing really well, obviously. He's got 91 points. But it's just too many other guys are not up to that level right now. And I'm not saying they got to play like Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchesne, but there's got to be some production there. Now that sets up the final week. You've got three games left. Calgary tomorrow, Colorado coming up on Thursday, and then Arizona in the back-to-back. And Joe, I mean, obviously it's the top two teams in the West, Calgary and Colorado. That's not easy for the Predators. And there is a scenario where that Arizona game could matter. And I think there's a chance if it does, Soros is playing in all three this week.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, I would think so. I think it was the right decision to not, you know, go back-to-back with him this weekend. Saw what happened last time they tried that. It wasn't all on him, but it wasn't good. I see some people talking about you could have gone with Riddick against Tampa Bay and then had Soros against the more beatable team. But, Soros had been on a three-day rest there. You're going into Tampa Bay to win that game. You're going there to win that game. And you should have thought going in, you could have won that game, even though right now Tampa Bay looks absolutely ridiculous. So you go with Soros. I don't think that's complicated. It's not like the Wild or some pushover. They're a 109-point team here fighting to have home ice to start the playoffs. So it's not like even if it was some patsy team, I wouldn't have done it. But if it was, at least it would be a little bit more arguable.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. William texting in says, we would win last night if Soros was in net. Big save Dave doesn't make so big of saves after all. Would they have won that game if Soros was in net last night? Maybe. I thought Riddick was fine for the most part. I mean, there's maybe one or two goals that maybe you'd like to have back, but when they put up darn near 50 shots on goal on him last night.
Yeah, I thought Riddick gave them a chance. He gave up some juicy rebounds, but then he got the save a lot of times on those too. So, I mean, I thought Riddick hung in there and he was under siege. And it just, they have a better chance, of course, any game. I mean, whatever sure. The outcome is, if they lose a game with Riddick and goal, you could always say they would have had a better chance with Soros, of course. But, like, you can't play him every game. He's played the most games in the league this year. And I just disagree with this idea of, Tampa, you just punt on Tampa Bay, but Soros will beat the Wild. The Wild are 8-0-2 in their last 10. They have 109 points. They've won five in a row. They were missing key players last night, and they were all over the Preds. So it was a couple of really tough opponents. And now Soros needed this extra rest, and the Preds need him to be really good tomorrow night. I know that for sure.
Greg on the text line says, you think maybe it's time to look at bringing Rocco back up? I know he's not great defensively, but I think he would try to score more than Luke Cunning. I think Rocco's been hurt for over a month. I don't think he's coming back up.
I think the Rocco train has sailed.
Yeah, I think Rocco.
Although it's not that a train sails, but you know what I'm saying.
Who knows? Maybe
one
day.
I could care less if a train sails
yes,
or not. Okay?
Thank you very much. Coming up next, we'll be
literally
joined,
sailing out of the station.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica. Jace, we'll get his thoughts on the Predators as they head into the final week of the regular season. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.